Public Radio Network live in the world. It's a big world, and it's a big world of hate right now. And I'm not trying to be negative or anything, but I will tell you that I know what's going on out there in the world because that's what I do, you know, and when you're immersed in it, I mean, most people, John Q. Public and his family get a headline or two, watch a little news. But when somebody like, you know, is like myself or Joe Montaldo or anybody else on this network is well-versed in what's going on, you're immersed in the news. You know every little tiny thing. And when someone says to you, hey, did you hear about this? You know, you already read about it 3 days before, you know. So I always try and look for good stories because it bridges a gap for me, you know, in this world right now. And it's a very tired and weary world. It's a thing that we have to work hard to get past and get away from. And there are good things happening within government, within the world. There's movements like you know, Trump wanting to get together with Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-un really wanting to get together and then discuss denuclearization of North Korea. That's huge. That's gigantic. That is such news. Let me tell you, if Barack Obama had orchestrated a move like that, people would be licking his butthole so happy, saying he's the best and he's this, he's that, he's great, he's amazing, and wow, and he would get the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, he got the Nobel Peace Prize, even though he killed more people, more innocent people with drones than anybody in the world. But it's very funny how if whatever Trump does doesn't matter. Trump could cure cancer tomorrow and people would be angry that they weren't allowed to die from cancer. That, you know, it's some stupid thing because that's what they've been programmed and brainwashed into. I've seen it before. I've worked with people in my life who are deprogrammers who would deprogram people's family members when they get sucked into these cults, and then they'd have to just they're brainwashed. They'd have to deprogram them and bring them back to center. So we're not talking about people who have a depth of knowledge. We're talking about what I like to call surface thinkers, people who don't think much past the surface, and then they don't have much of an opinion. So when they get to these groups, the groups try to fuel them, push their agenda, fuel their opinions against them, and then these people become a robot just repeating what these groups say. We find it in political parties. We find it in organized religion. We find it in corporations, you know. So they don't like it when people think for themselves. You think for yourself, they don't like it. And when I'm saying they, I mean they, the powers that be, because they lose control when people become individuals. When people realize that, you know, you are what you've got. You might have family, you might have friends, you might have people close to you. That's great. But you're what you've got. You come in this world, you leave this world, you're what you've got. And then you have to decide if you're going to be an asset to this world or something other. And a lot of these people who are brainwashed are in the category of other. They're not being an asset. They're not helping. They're not fixing anything. They're not moving forward for a better future. They're living in a stagnant state of hate. And this is a wholesale hate. This hate has been manufactured for people. And it's okay to hate now. It's being allowed. It's being encouraged. And so now we see anti-Semitism around the world. You know, people in Canada, I just read a story about people in Canada who are protesting Jewish people because they're moving the Jewish people around in buses, the schools and synagogues and whatever from one place to another. And then these people are angry about the buses. And then they show up at a meeting wearing these yellow blocks on them, like in reminiscent of the yellow stars that they would give the Jewish people that would send off these camps, right? Horrible. Horrible. And they're like, well, you know, that's not what it was. It was a school bus. And people, like, they lie. They lie. People lie. If you're going to do something, whatever you do, Don't lie about it. And a very smart man told me a long time ago, Dennis Dillon, who is a mentor of mine in a way, because this guy, he was the district attorney of Nassau County on Long Island for I don't know how many years. I mean, multiple years. I mean, I think he retired when he was in his early 70s. But I was able to be around people like that that had a strong moral compass and that rubs off on others. So, you know, when, you know, you shouldn't, you know, like he told me, you shouldn't do anything that you're ashamed of, right? Isn't that simple? You shouldn't do anything that you're ashamed of. If you're ashamed of doing what you're doing, why are you doing it? So with all of this nonsense going on out there in the world and all the hate and anti-Semitism on top of that, people, and you know, there are people that you would think are intelligent people, that they're functioning, they have a good family or whatever, and you deal with them all the time. And then, well, every once in a while, you hear that hate come out of them, whether it's against black people or Jewish people, whatever group they get on. And then it doesn't just come out. It comes out like a fountain because they've kept it in, you know. Now people aren't keeping it in. People are letting it out. And then it's obvious. It's out there. The anti-Semitism's growing. You have Vladimir Putin saying that the Russians didn't interfere with the elections, which we know is false. We know that's a lie. You can't trust Vladimir Putin, really. He's not a moral compass. You know, he's what you don't want to be. He's a representation of evil for me, because I know the people that are suffering because of him. I know the people that have died because of him. You know, there's a lot of reporters that have died who investigated him and did stories. I mean, there's a list, a long body trail. So to him, it's a game, meddling with elections or whatever. And let's face it, we all do it. You think the U.S. doesn't meddle in other people's elections? We do it all the time. It's a game, you know. But he instead blamed the Jews. That's the Jews, you know. The Jews did it. And then saying negative things about Jewish people. But now you see in Germany, Jewish people are afraid. And it's not because of Nazis. They're afraid because of all the Muslims that are there now who want to kill all the Jews. Muslims don't like Jews. And I'm not talking about all Muslims, but I'm talking about a majority. They don't like Jews. But then I know a guy in Australia, you know, white guy, an engineer, lives his life, does his thing. But you get the guy started on Jews, man. All you got to do is say the word Jew. And he starts going crazy and spouting off all his hate about Jews and, you know, how the Nazis weren't so bad or whatever. When I hear that, I get sick to my stomach because, you know, these Nazis annihilated millions of people, women, children, stripped them naked, washed them down, put them in ovens and gassed them and whatever and got rid of the remains, you know, like a factory. If you say that, if you say anything positive about Nazis or anything, you are, what you're doing is letting go of your humanity. You know, what you're doing is you're focusing on something that is inherently evil. And you're not putting any kind of value on life. You're making it like, you know, I mean, there are Nazis that took Jewish people's skin and made lamps out of it and furniture. That's how sick and demented humans can get. And we can never forget that. And then my thing is that this is 2018 and history repeats itself. And I feel like we're coming around again. I feel like this hate, because it's being allowed, because it's not just being allowed, being encouraged. So I like to think, okay, who is encouraging this hate? Who's out there doing this? I listen to people like Hillary Clinton. I listen to people like Barack Obama, you know, George Soros. I mean, are they any better than a Vladimir Putin? They're all part of the same game, right? When I listen to these people talk, the hate is in their speech, you know. And if people say that Trump is a racist, he's whatever, I don't know what he is. I don't know what, you know, I think the guy is a huge joker, you know, a joker. And I don't think he's there for any other reason for the big, to put his big book of so there's, you know, so there, I was president, right? And then I see the good coming out of the economy, but I also see the division. And we need someone to unite the country, but it can't come from any kind of an agenda-based platform. It's got to come from the United States Constitution platform is what we've got. And there's nobody out there right now who's going to do that. People saying Oprah's going to run, Oprah's going to run. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I like Oprah. I happen to like her a lot. I think that she's very balanced. But it's a long way away to say who's going to do this and who's going to do that. And we don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone a year from now, let alone 3 years from now. So it'll be a three-ring circus. You can count on that. My fear for this world is that there's no centering. There's no balance point. And you've got to find your place in the circle, you know? But this country is in turmoil, and then there's other people out there that are fanning the flames. The Vladimir Putins are fanning the flames. The Xi Jinpings are helping fan the flames, and they don't want America to be strong. They want to be strong. And then you hear people say, MIT did a study, and you know, Americans are a third world people. They're living in a third world. We have more third world people like the, how they're living in the levels of poverty than other countries that are third world countries. And I'm like, stupid. You're cherry picking stories to try to prove that this country's bad for some reason. We've got the richest poor people on the planet. I've traveled abroad. I've seen poor people in third world countries. They're not sitting there in some trailer with a widescreen TV, with a fridge full of food, with money coming in from the government every month. And they're on the internet. They have a cell phone. They have a car. They have all these things. No, there's people drinking mud water, eating rats, eating bugs off the ground because they've got no food, starving to death. And that's a lot of third world countries. That's most third world countries. So, like, the people that run this country down, they do it out of hate. They're not doing it out of information or data. You know, you're talking about hate. They hate it. So, you know who did that? Barack Obama did that. He did it all the time. Michelle Obama did that. She did that all the time. Hey, now they're looking at making movies for Netflix. Barack Obama's coming into his own. He always wanted to be a Hollywood producer. Now he's going to be a Hollywood producer. He and his wife, hand in hand, making movies, right? Why not? It's just another, you know, it's another piece of the puzzle. And then I think it doesn't take much to see people, but you have to be able to see them with clarity. These other people are out there. They live in a fantasy land, or they're just they're buying what they're being sold. The most alarming thing is that there's not one subject out there that doesn't have an opposing view of such a level of friction that people can't have a civil discussion about it. And it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter. So I don't know what's going to happen after. And I think that, you know, Trump reining in Kim Jong-un, and Kim Jong-un saying, yeah, we're not going to launch any more missiles. We're not going to do any more tests. You know, all these talks going on. And they're doing it, they're doing it soon. They're doing it in May. It's not just, you know, all right, well, we'll do it in December or, you know, in September of next year or whatever. So South Korea has a vested interest in peace. United States has a vested interest in peace. And then the whole stance is like, okay, Trump's saying these talks are great, whatever, but we're still willing to go in hard either way. I mean, that's a strong leader. That's not the same as someone saying, oh, it's okay. Yeah, you guys can have victory mess. That's okay. You can threaten people every day. It's fine. It's fine. We had a doormat policy for many years where people just wiped their feet on the United States. You know, coming over the border willy-nilly, lack of security, you know, sanctuary states now. Or you know, turn the blind eye to criminals. Criminals. So now you have the Department of Justice suing California, and you have Jerry Brown, the governor of California, saying this is war. He said that the U.S. declared war against California. But I don't think he realizes that California is in the U.S. And all these hippies who are like, hey, we're going to secede from the Union. We're going to be our own country. They don't even get what they say. This is like I don't take them seriously, you know? Like when you're in a conversation with someone, they say something just so asininely stupid. Asinine? We're going to secede from the Union. I love talking to people like that because I like to make their brain hurt. I like to ask them questions that makes their brain hurt. I'll give you a for instance. This is my favorite one. If you ever run into somebody who is that ignorant, who says that California should secede, you tell them this, well, who's going to protect them? And they're like, huh? I'm like, well, California is their own country. They need a military. You know, we have military bases there that we would have to annex because we're not going to pull out all those assets. But who's going to protect them? Because in California, ooh, they got a police force. They may have a National Guard. But that doesn't mean that they can, I mean, like, you know, a company like Blackwater would be able to waltz right in and take over. And for that matter, if California secedes, who's saying that we're not going to take California? That take it back. And kick all those people out. And deport them somewhere. To Canada. Is that crazy? Well, Canada doesn't want them. Canada doesn't even have the population that California has. Canada's got, 34 million people somewhere around there? For all of Canada? That's not a lot of people. You know? And that's why... Another thing about people from other countries, like that... A dude I know in Australia, he's like spouting out. He like really focuses on hating America. And it's like, you know, there's hundreds of countries, man. If you want to complain about countries, man, there's countries that have atrocities going on, you know, where they torture their own people and do terrible things. America is literally a country that you can come to and do it legally. You can work really hard at whatever you're doing or you want to do and become whatever you want to become. You know what? If Donald Trump can be president, then anybody can pretty much do anything. And then, you know what? I know people that came to this country. My friend Mr. Kim, he owns a bunch of 7-Elevens on Long Island, right? And he came here with a couple of his family members legally, not illegally. They all lived in one little tiny cramped apartment in Queens. They all drove a taxi cab, and they saved their money. They amassed enough money where Mr. Kim was able to go in business for himself and his other family members, went to other businesses, but he bought a 7-Eleven. And he ran it, and then he bought another one, you know, and another one. So the guy got the American dream. You know why? Because he was willing to work hard enough to get it. And you have a lot of silver platter people out there. A lot of millennials are out there who have a silver platter mentality that I don't want to do anything, but I want to be rich and famous. I don't want to have to try hard, but I want to make all the money. And that's not realistic. But the problem is when you have people who just put down every aspect of what we're all about, and then, you know, with gun control, sure. Australia's got, 29 million people, 30 million people, you know? That's, I think New York State's got like 28 million. So you're talking about a whole continent that has as many people as a state in the United States, you know? The difference between Australia and the U.S. are many. Australia has different demographics, a different system altogether, different mentality. And Australia, since they banned guns there, rape is 4 times the United States. There's plenty of crime in Australia. The crime is worse in Australia than the U.S. And people are getting stabbed and killed and other things like that. There's still gun crime. And now they have an influx of illegal guns because they have these refugees who are there, who are establishing their own areas. They're not letting people in. The Australian people are shunned, just like what's going on in Sweden, just like what's going on in Germany. These people have their own areas. And then they're living by their own Sharia law. They're not paying attention to the law in those countries, which is kind of a laughing stock for that country. Some countries, like Germany, are losing their identity. So if Trump is going to be a strong person, a strong leader, I'll embrace that because we need it. It's a necessity. We see world leaders now who are very weak. You know, look at Merkel in Germany. You think she's not weak? What she's doing, she's single-handedly destroying her own country. And then you're allowing a multitude of people to come in who don't care about Germany or their roots or being part of it. They're only there because they're escaping something else somewhere else. You know what they're escaping? They're escaping the same Sharia law that they live under. They're escaping places that people operate under Sharia law, and they're leaving, going somewhere else, and then they're spreading their own Sharia law there, and now things are turning bad for the people. Oh, look at England, especially London. Look what's going on there. It's a mess, a huge mess. So things have never changed. Religion is at war with religion, and it's a push. It's a push. In Indonesia last week, they tortured 2 Christians public because they were practicing their language, their religion, their Christian religion. But they broke Sharia law. So they whipped them in public, whipped them and caned them. This is the place where Barack Obama was raised. This is the place where Barack Obama himself said that Indonesia was a place where the gentle religion of Islam meets democracy. Yeah? You want to start dissecting that statement? The gentle religion of Islam? When? When was it gentle? And sure, you know what? When I talk like this with people, they start, well, the Christians did things too and whatever. Hey, man, I'm not into organized religion. Organized religion wasn't invented by a god or energy or nothing. It was invented by man for money, power, control, and corruption. And it's not about people being the individual. It's about people being part of the body of that religion and paying into it and supporting it. But what do? They leave you with a nice warm feeling? I've been to Southern Baptist church, people dancing, singing, having a good time, the preacher up there screaming, yelling. Sure, man, you feel some good energy, but because of the people there are putting out that good energy. I've also been to Catholic churches where the priests would just basically berate you for the time they're there, and they send around that collection plate, right? And if you have some special thing going on, you're required to pay more money. I used to go in there with my grandmother, who was Catholic and Italian, right? It's like a burden to Italians, you know, their religion, Catholic religion. So you dredge in there, the Archdiocese, Rockville, sent to Long Island, and she'd light a candle for whatever reason. And I'd say, how much did you light a candle? I want to light one too. And she's like, well, it doesn't cost anything to light a candle, but you have to make a donation. And well, it does cost something. Well, you don't have to make a donation, but people make donations. And that's kind of the thing. When that collection plate goes around and you're sitting around your peers, you're sitting around your neighbors, the people who are close to you, people look at you as to what you put in that collection plate. They want to see how much, and it's a competition in a weird way. And the church relies on that. They know that. It's a judgment of how much money you put in there. Now, I'm going to preach to y'all. God doesn't care about your money. God doesn't care about your money. God doesn't need your money. The church needs your money. These synagogues need your money. All these places need your money. These crazy religions that start up, they need your money. They need your soul. They need your body. They need you to be there. They need your kids. They want you to bring your kids so they can like, you know, program their brains and then have them go and support them. It's a company. It's a business. It's a powerful business. It's a business that doesn't create. They don't make anything. They don't make tires or Twinkies or nothing. It's a business, and they take your money. But they're taking your money away from your family. You can live better if you aren't giving so much to that religion. You can pray in your home. You can pray in your car. You can pray walking down the street. You can talk to God at any time. There's no time, no specific time to talk to God. There's no visiting hours, you know? But the religions will poison you and say that, and they'll do that, right? And then this is the problem with humans when they get programmed by something, no matter what it is. I don't care if it's religion. I don't care if it's pushing an agenda like gun control. Or how about just judging others? But they don't practice what they preach. Judge not, lest ye be judged. Really? I see a lot of judgmental people out there. I've been judged unfairly in my life many times. I've been labeled so many times by so many people who didn't like me or what I was doing, what I was saying, you know, or the fact that I'm a very outgoing person, especially when I'm in a group of people. I tend to stand out. But I'm a performer. I'm a huge ham. You know, I mean, you put me out there, there's going to be a spotlight because it's what I enjoy. It's part of my personality. It's something that I can't hold back. I'm always on. I can get out of bed, put my feet on the ground, and be on. So that's just me. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying that I've run into people in my life that resent it. And then those people are going to be hating on you. They're not hating you for what you do, for what you are. They're hating you because of what they think that they don't like about you. But I don't need to change that to make somebody else happy. And those people are never happy. So when it really comes down to it, when somebody has a problem with you, they're the ones who have the problem. And they should go get that problem fixed. However, they need to fix it. Because it's one thing if you, let's say you have a loved one who's concerned because you're smoking cigarettes or doing something that's bad for your health or whatever. They could talk to you. That's fine, you know? And it's love. They're concerned. They want to talk to you because they love you. But I'm talking about people that just don't like things about, oh, he's too loud, you know? He laughs too much. I've heard that in my life. I laugh too much. Maybe I got a lot to laugh at. I like to make people laugh. Laughing's better than crying. I'd rather have someone say, he laughs too much than, oh, he cries too much. But you have to watch out for the haters, and you got to take care of yourself. And then just so I said at the beginning of the show, you know, you're an individual in this world, and you decide who you help. You decide who's going to be the beneficiary of your kindness and love, because we all have it. You know what people want? Everybody wants to be loved, and they want to feel loved. Some people are never feel like they're loved. Some people aren't loved, right? Because they're fundamentally unlovable. Some people are loved by many. And then if you think about those people and you make that list and you say, hey, you know, what is it about this person that was loved by so many people? And what is it about this other person that wasn't? And well, what did they do? Did they help others? Did they have kindness in their heart? You know, did they take care of others? And it's not about putting money in the collection plate. You know that? It's about being a good person and helping your neighbors, no matter who they are. So if my next-door neighbor on one side is Muslim, and my next-door neighbor on the other side is Jewish, and the guy across the street is Catholic, and the one behind me is Protestant, and something terrible happens, I'm not going to judge them on their religions before I help them. I'm just going to help them because they're my neighbors, right? And I think that religions, organized religions, divide people and take people away from each other in communities, or they try to form communities to keep everybody under control, everyone together judging each other, looking at each other, judging each other. So let's talk about the institutions that do the judging. Catholic Church. Every day I read stories about the Catholic Church, how priests have gay orgies, or they're raping little kids, raping little boys, doing terrible things. You can't deny it. Maybe the Pope tries to deny it because he lives in fantasy land. You know, he's Bono. He is Bono. You know Bono from U2? He's Bono. So Bono has this organization called One, and it's supposed to help people who are poor, whatever, AIDS, and that type of thing, especially all through Africa, right? So now these reports came out that people who worked in this organization were being treated like dogs, being beaten in many cases, beyond sexually harassed, raped, things like that. And you read this and you're like, oh my God, how can a dude who is supposed to be all about the love, all about caring, the one, you know, you got to help everybody, whatever. Bono chastises people in the U.S. Oh, you have your guns or whatever. He said, if you voted for Trump, you are the KKK. This is a guy from Ireland, and they based their music business in the Netherlands because they escaped Ireland because they were required to pay 5% more on their taxes. Keep in mind, Bono, the rest of the guys in the band, and the manager are the five richest people in Ireland, the five wealthiest people, top five. And they moved the base of their music to save 5% and not give it to the poor or the people that needed it in Ireland. Instead, he's going to come up with an organization to give money to people in Africa. And then they said the money was mismanaged. They said that people were treated like dirt, like dogs, for all these years. And it's just coming out now because people complained and nobody said anything about it. They tried to hide it. And this is the problem with people like Bono and the rest of them, the ones who are on a crusade. I'm on a crusade. But they don't care. That's the God's honest truth. They don't care. They only care about how they look. They only care about what they can bullcrap people on. And it's literally, well, I'm doing all these great things over here, but F all these other people. They don't matter. And we see that a lot. We see that a lot. We see it in California. Here's California talking all this crap about illegal aliens and sanctuary cities, a sanctuary state. Come here and be free. But then they have all of these homeless people who are Americans, who are living in the streets, who are being abused by the authorities and kicked out of one place into another place and then kicked out of that place and all have all their belongings destroyed and thrown out. And there's tens of thousands of them. So you're going to go to California as a refugee for a sanctuary state. They're going to give you money for a bed. They're going to give you money for food. They're going to give you money. They give you free passes to go to see movies and plays and all that. They do it in New York City too, right? All of these things you get for free. Free health care for 7 years, right? You come in this country illegally, which is mind-blowing because you have all these homeless people in the streets that don't have all that. They've got nothing. They've got less than nothing. And we're giving our money, our tax dollars, to that, to a sanctuary state, to protect people who are, in a lot of cases, criminals. You know, all of them who actually illegally are criminals, right? And they turn a blind eye to the homeless. The hypocrites, man, hypocrites. That's such a classic example of hypocrisy. How come they don't see it? Why is it these people think they can do no wrong? That anything that they do is A-OK because they justify it with some other thing. That's the problem with anti-Semitic behavior. That's the problem with hate. that's the problem with all kinds of racism, is the fact that the people that are doing it are using something else to justify it, you know? And then we see that a lot. Look at religion. Oh, you know, Muslims hate Jews. The Jews don't like Muslims or whatever, man. They're doing it because they have something dictating that hate to them. Muhammad Ali, big time boxer back in the day, when he became a Muslim, he had said a lot of things that were held back from the media, and now they're coming out. But he said a lot of things against women. He said a lot of things against Jewish people. And then also the Vietnam War, when he was called up, and then he didn't want to participate in protesting the war, saying terrible things about the United States. And not for nothing, if you get called up for war, it's up to you whether you want to be some conscientious objector. And you go, but you kind of sit it out, whatever, man. This guy attacked his own country, the country that made him famous, the country that gave him the attention he wanted. He sought that attention. He fought and sought that attention. And then he climbed to a level of prosperity in America that most fighters will never even see. But instead, he said, well, my religion of Islam won't let me go fight the Vietnam War. But we know that Islam is not peaceful and gentle religion. It's anything but that. It's a religion of being a carnivore. You know, it's out there eating meat. It's that simple. The behavior of that religion is a conquering religion. You know, they're out there to get rid of other people who don't believe in what they believe in. And there's a lot of hardliners that are doing that, right? But Muhammad Ali failed, because think about all the people that made him famous here in the U.S. That's his people, not Islam. The people that support you, the people that love you and care for you, not some crazy religion, the people that are there for you, right? Which are all kinds of people. The little kids that looked up to him, you know? And then here he is slapping everybody in the face. What do you think that did for the morale of the men fighting, men and women, in Vietnam? What do you think that did for the morale? And I'm not going to say that the war was right. I'm not going to say it was wrong. You know, I have definitely my own views on Vietnam. But I'm going to say that you have to support your fellow Americans. And then that's the right thing to do. That's the golden rule. He failed. He absolutely failed. He also went around saying that women shouldn't be showing their bodies in public, their faces in public, not work and that type of thing, and then not leave the house without men. I mean, like, he was there. He was in that world of Islam, right? But it's funny that the same world that he preached for that time would have kept his daughter out of boxing, and she wouldn't have had any of those opportunities. She wouldn't have even gone to a university. You know, she would have been in the home making babies for some other guy who'd be beating on her if she stepped out of line. If you know that religion, you know the truth of what goes on. But we're in a world that justifies it. And then the people of all these religions over time fighting, you know, don't matter who they were, right? The Spanish Inquisition. When the Christians went after Jews and Muslims, right? Doesn't matter. They justified their actions because of their religion, or because of their belief. So you don't have to be part of a religion. You just have to have a belief. And then the crazy actions, these people who are mental, they don't need much to push them over the edge. Once they feel justified, then they're out there doing it. And then now we're in a world that gives the green light to that type of behavior, that justification. So just like the thugs who are going around, this Antifa, you don't see them anymore, but they were going around hurting people, beating people with all kinds of things, baseball bats or whatever, bicycle locks. I saw a guy cracked in the head with a bicycle lock on camera. And they're going around smashing windows, burning cars. Think about that. It was encouraged by the Democratic Party. That, it was like an attempt of a coup. They didn't like the election results, so they encouraged people to go and do that. And then they broke the law. But they felt justified in hurting those innocent people. They felt justified in breaking the law. People need to stand up for themselves. Will they do it? Do you think millennials will stand up for themselves? I'll tell you this. If my friends and I back in the day were standing around and Antifa people came to attack us, we would have pummeled them. There'd be nothing left of them. You know, they would have been they would have been very sorry for their actions because people were tough back then. But people aren't tough now, and they've made it this way. You know, and now it's a whole movement against men. Everything you see is either anti-white or anti-man. There's universities out there that have courses on it now. They're having seminars against whiteness and things like that. I'm listening to this and I'm like, this is horribly racist. This is unbelievable. How could they be doing this? How could they feel because they feel justified. They feel justified because they have a movement going on that is fanning the flames of all this hate. And where is it coming from? People like George Soros. So what's his end of it? You know, he's the one pushing gun control. He has billions of dollars he's soaking into all this. He gave Barack Obama a bunch of money. You know, I mean, a bunch of them did for the Obama Foundation, right? So who are they to tell you what you should think or what's good for you or your family? Who are they to dictate? And let's go back to the robber barons, especially of the early 1900s, because we're 100 years from back from then, right? Think about the women's rights movement, even early 1900s, you know? Susan B. Anthony, people like that from the 1800s, people who have fought for a long time to get rights. So it was International Women's Day the other day, you know? And I'm reading this article about International Women's Day. And I'm thinking, like, man, you know, here they started back in the day, well, I think it was 1905, somewhere around there. And then it was more of a thing that happened in socialist nations because women were oppressed, still are oppressed all around the world, right? And then it became a thing way later here in the United States. After the UN kind of declared International Women's Day, and there was all kinds of events that went on and whatever. But in 1905, they were upset because women were being sexually harassed in the workplace, you know, molested by their bosses and whatever. And then here we have 100 years later, over 100 years later, 13, 14 years later, we have the Harvey Weinsteins who are out there. We have all these people, but I will say this. All right, let's say you're in New Orleans, right? It's Mardi Gras. And you're up there throwing beads down to girls. And it's a thing there where if a girl shows her boobs, she gets beads. So you know the girls walking around with a lot of beads have showed their boobs to a lot of people. Now me, if I see a pair of boobs, it doesn't thrill me. You know, I'm like, ooh, man, you know, I mean, like, you have to be really primitive. You know, and it's one thing to admire someone's figure. You know, you like the way that, you know, you like the way they're built and that type of thing. To me, sexy is something that's within, you know, it's mainly mental. But, yeah, you can be warm to someone's form. That's fine. But it's just funny to me how people are judged on it. And it's also like when men are out in public, a man can walk around without a shirt, but a woman can't. It's indecent exposure if she shows these boobs, which is ridiculous to me. It's ridiculous, you know. But whatever. That's to me is sexist, you know. If I'm gonna have a movement, I'm gonna move to free the boobs. But all right, so you have someone walking through New Orleans. She's showing her boobs. She's getting beads. So here comes this girl. Show me your boobs. The girl shows the boobs. She gets the beads. Now, here comes Rachel Maddow from CNBC, right? And then you say, show me your boob. And what they, before you even say the word boobs, you look at it, you're like, oh, never mind, oh, never mind. You stop in mid-sentence because you realize that A, you don't want to see that, B, they don't see. It's like the police tell you, there's nothing to see here. Move along. Move right along. She's not getting any beads. Yeah, I can say that about Rachel Maddow because I can't stand her. I think that she is, I think she's a terrorist, honestly. She promotes that type of angry hate, and people have gotten hurt because of her show. And I'll say that because it's happened. Okay. But now, the Rachel Maddow goes and calls the police. This guy said, let me see your boobs. The cop's going to say, you know, it's Mardi Gras, and that's what happens here. And it's as simple as that, of knowing who you're dealing with and distinguishing who's who. And not everybody's the same. So I'll say this about casting couches, that the women who went in there to spread their legs, men too, knew what they were doing, and they wanted the job, and they felt like they had to do that. Now, is that right? Is that wrong? Of course it's wrong, because if you go get a job somewhere, you shouldn't have to have sex with someone to get the job, right? But they did it willingly, and this is the thing that, like, when Harvey Weinstein is saying they're going to bring him into court and charge him with all this stuff, New York said, you know, NYPD said they have a case against him. Cases, plural, LA too, right? They have to prove that those participants were unwilling. When you say the word rape, rape means unwilling. And then I don't think they're going to be able to do that because they knew what they were doing. There's porno stars now that are saying that they were raped because they had sex with the person that was interviewing them on the casting couch for the porno. Meanwhile, the whole nature of the porno is to have sex. And they ended up having sex with these guys because they wanted the job. You know, and that was part of the thing. And the whole world's gotten very bizarre. Remember what I said before, what Dennis Dillon said to me? Don't be ashamed of what you do. Right? But these people are taking the responsibility. They're not feeling that shame for what they did. They're blaming others. And it's okay to blame others now for what you do. And I'm not saying that all of them, and I'm not saying that the guy didn't rape anybody, because I don't know. I wasn't there. I have to see the case, the facts of the case, the information behind it, and then you have a trial. You don't know until the facts are known. But that, well, you know, all right, there was a case in the city where a woman called the police on a guy because she was sitting on a subway. The guy was looking at her, and she said that she felt like she was being raped. So she calls 911 and says, I just got raped on the subway. You know, tries to ID this guy, some random dude on the subway. Cops respond to open up a rape case. Then after they start investigating, she says, well, how did he do this for most people? Did he touch you, you know, molest you, put his hands on you? Well, no. Well, what happened? Did he get you outside the train? Did he drag you into an alleyway? Or, you know, what happened? Well, he was looking at me, and I felt like I was being raped. And they're like, you know, that's not illegal. But there's people out there that would like to make that illegal. And this is my problem with what's going on now with these witch hunts. And I'll say witch hunts because the people that will, I mean, if you're going to make a law every time someone's offended by something or feels something weird about something, then you yourself are going to live in a society where you're not going to be allowed to do anything or look at anyone or want to talk to anyone. So there's something called the chilling effect. The chilling effect is technically speaking, is when, let's say a government entity comes after you, a DA charges you for something that they personally didn't like what you're doing. And I've had this happen to me. And you have to fight your way out through court because they're trying to chill your speech or what you're saying. I mean, I was arrested for doing a television show and nothing in New York. And they didn't like what I was doing. And the DA said that he found me to be personally lewd, crude, obnoxious, and obscene. Can you imagine that? Lou Cruda boxes obscene. Michael Angley, really? Come on, man. But, and I won the case because it was ridiculous. And all the jury, it was very hard finding a jury because most of them had watched the show. It was in the news. It was all over. CNN carried it too, the whole bit. And people were like, this is ridiculous. But he was a hardcore Christian conservative district attorney who didn't care about the law. He only cared about what he felt, right? So let's say that you make laws for everybody, and then there's chilling effect going on. People are going to be afraid to do anything. You have guys now in college. I talk to a lot of college guys because I'm in Ithaca, where Cornell University is, in Ithaca College, two huge colleges, you know. Guys are telling me that they're afraid to date women in their college, or if they're at a party and they're drinking, they don't want to have sex with them. Now, the women will say, are saying that they don't understand why the guys don't want to talk to them or have fun with them at all. You have to look at the angry feminists like Rachel Madcows out there, the ones who want to make laws for all the rest of them. So, yeah, you're going to have the girl who wants to show their boobs for beads and she has no problem. You're going to have the girl at the party who's willing to have sex with a guy who has no problem. But then there's other people that will have a problem with what they're doing, and they want to make laws around that. I know a guy that went to prison for 2 years. 2 years. Because a girl, but he had sex with this girl. He was in college, right? They go on this college trip down to Maryland. They're all getting drunk and high in the hotel room, a bunch of people partying. It was late at night. He's getting tired. He wants to go to sleep. This girl's hanging out with him. They start getting busy. The girl's friend that was with her is saying, well, come on, I want to go. Come on, I want to go. The girl's like, no, I want to stay here with so-and-so and have some fun, you know. And then the girl ends up going out in the hallway. These guys have sex. They're having a good time. The girl, go, you know, after they're done, the girl drags her friend out of there. And then the next day, this dude gets a call from the school saying that this girl said that he raped another girl. Now, the one that he had sex with is saying, yeah, we were partying, I was drinking, and I don't remember what happened. It's as simple as that. I don't remember what happened. They charged him in the state of Maryland with rape, and they railroaded the guy. He ended up going to jail for 2 years. He had a crappy lawyer on top of that, and ended up going to jail. He's black. I'm going to say he's a black man in America. Yeah? Because there's white guys that happened to, that he never went to jail. But he's a black man in America, and he went to prison for 2 years, and he has to register a sex offender, and he's trying to get it off his record because it was a long time ago. But when the girl said, yeah, then in the trial, the girl who he had sex with came in and testified for him. And she said, yeah, I would have had sex with him either way. It doesn't matter. I was attracted to him. It wasn't good enough for the jury. It wasn't good enough for the judge. And they railroaded the guy, you know, railroaded him in prison and took a chunk of his life away and basically ruined his life because he got drunk and high with a girl and had sex. And the girl's friend said that he raped her. So it wasn't even the guy. It was the friend. And she said, well, I know I was there. I know what happened. Now, what happened was what I just said to you. Does that sound like the guy raped her? So you've got to be really careful if you're a male in America, no matter what color you are, a male. But there's a movement against white males now, especially. But you've got to be really careful. If you're in college, you know, by the way, he got kicked out of college for this. He had a scholarship in sports. He lost that, got kicked out of college. So you think about how your life can just be disintegrated by someone who makes an allegation. And, you know, don't think for a second the cops are on your side in a situation like that, because they're not. Don't think for a second that the judge is going to be on your side, because they're not. They're supposed to be impartial. Supposed to be. A lot of times they're not. A lot of times they're judgmental. And actually, thinking back, he didn't even have a jury. I remember it, you know. the advice I gave to him was, don't go back to Maryland, number one. You know, let get a lawyer here and then negotiate it. But, you know, but he put his faith in the system, and the system put him in prison for 2 years. It's that simple. So it's a dangerous world out there for a lot of reasons. And now the guys I talk to, they're looking for local girls who hang out in bars, to hang out with and try to have some fun with and that type of thing. But they're not looking to within the colleges that they're in. And they're not looking to ruin their lives. You know what, Cornell? $55,000-$60,000 a year to go to Cornell. So you're talking about a tuition of 4 years of over $250,000 by the time you figure in the residence and parking spaces. If you have a parking space, you know, after a couple of years, you're allowed to have a car and that type of thing. I'll tell you, man, you're going to throw an education away, an Ivy League college with all that money, over $250,000, because you had sex with someone who's going to wake up in the morning and say that you raped them. That's heavy. And I'm not saying that rape doesn't happen, but, you know, of course it happens. And of course it happens on college campuses. But in the same sense, not everybody who says that they're a rapist is telling the truth. And we've seen this time and time again. Look at Rolling Stone. Do I need to cite anything more than Rolling Stone, who did a huge rape article about a college? And then it turns out the whole thing was a lie. That big girl who was working with them and told all these stories about was lying. And that hurt Rolling Stone to the point where, I mean, financially it damaged them. They damaged their reputation. Nobody wanted to be reading Rolling Stone anymore. But there's an element out there that's willing to believe these stories and push as hard as they can against the people that they don't like. So these days, they don't assassinate much. Seth Rich, yeah. Sure, he was assassinated, no doubt. But these days, if they want to take your fame away or your money away, all they need to do is discredit you and say some terrible thing. You know, I did a story the other day on the Daily Update about an IRS agent in Boston who handcuffed, raped, and abused this girl, assaulted every time, every possible way, who was an intern for the IRS. You know, she accused him. She went to the authorities. This guy was allowed to work. And now he's still free, not even on bail. He's charged with rape. He's charged with all these heavy felonies, and the IRS will not even make a comment if he's still working for the IRS or not, which means he is, you know? And then he's free until his court appearance in April. Now, if that was anybody else, man, that you or me, whatever, would be sitting there behind bars until our arraignment, right? And this is the world we live in. This is the world we live in. There's a side, there's their side, there's our side. And they can do whatever they want to do and break the rules and whatever, do horrible things. But we can't, because we can't defend ourselves. And it's as simple as that. So I think that the more these things unfold in our world, the more people pay attention, the more people can change the world around them. I like to think that, and I'm just not seeing it as a problem. I'm not seeing it. You know, I'm seeing just finger pointing and division and anger and all of this. And certainly, if you're accused of rape and you work as an investigator, a criminal investigator for the IRS, you need to be put on suspension, you know, until that thing's meted out. But in the same sense, look at the FBI. It turns out that the FBI has been paying people in the Geek Squad, Best Buy, to search their computers. Now, you bring your computer into Best Buy to get fixed, you're not a suspect of anything. You know, there's no court coming after you. There's no warrant against you. Nothing. But that Geek Squad, private citizen, private individual, searches through your computer, your images, your videos, anything that's written. And if they find anything in there that they find questionable, they give it to the FBI. The FBI was paying them from $500 to $1,000. So here's a government agency circumventing the Fourth Amendment, letting Best Buy, private citizens, go to your computer, look at your private stuff, paying them, giving them an incentive to find something. So a doctor had gotten harangued for child porn. Okay. And this was way back. This was like back in 2001. He gets harangued for child porn. You say, okay, child porn, he's a bad guy. You need to do away with him, especially an oncologist, a doctor, you know? So 6 years later, in 2007, the judge in the case said, one, this isn't child porn. It wasn't even close to being child porn, it turns out. It was some picture of some kid naked in the bathtub, right? His kid, I believe. And so the judge said it's not child porn. The judge also deemed, the FBI that they lied. They lied to get a warrant. They go into the guy's house. They searched the guy's house. They seized all kinds of stuff. And then the case was dismissed. So this doctor was fired. He was shunned by his family, his friends. Imagine being a doctor with the headlines, child porn found on doctor's computer. All of this happened to this guy. Sure, he's going to get to sue. He's going to sue the FBI. He's going to sue Best Buy, all that. He's going to get his money out of it, but he's not going to get his reputation back. People still going to be thinking things about him, looking at him with raised eyebrows. And all of this was done by the government. Remember when the FBI went after the bomber in Atlanta? When they were doing the Olympics and all that, they had this big concert going on. So the guy they went after wasn't the right guy. They dragged his name through the media. They raided his house. They seized all the stuff. He, to this day, still hasn't gotten a lot of his stuff back from the FBI. Totally innocent. Had nothing to do with it. But yet they convicted him beforehand. The second they put their teeth into you and make it known. But when you leave it at end, but in the case with this doctor, we're talking about a civilian that had no right whatsoever to be going through this guy's personal stuff and handing it over to the FBI under their assumption that something is child porn. And the FBI acting on it and pushing so hard. So I don't know what's going on with these government agencies. I don't know what's going on with the FBI and all these other government, I mean, all of them are all falling apart. The IRS, if we can't trust them, what the hell do we have? Just a whole bunch of government corporation. That's what they are. They're corporations. You know, the IRS is a corporation. The FBI is a corporate. That's how I look at them, because they're not acting for us and we the people. They're a separate body, a separate entity acting for themselves, you know? And then we're the ones who are the adversaries. We're the ones being, you know what? I got to watch out. If I have my computer fixed at Best Buy, the person there is going to be looking for stuff that they can construe as anything as illegal and hand it over to the FBI. We live in a police state that's fascism, that's Hitler stuff, and this is happening now. So I want you guys to think about your privacy and what's important to you, you know, and I don't care if you're innocent, guilty, or whatever the hell person you are. I want you to think of your privacy and your family's privacy and this world of intrusion going on. So I'm all for draining the swamp as long as they do it and get rid of these corrupt bastards, and I want to see people held accountable. And I'm going to leave you with that. This is Michael Angley. I'm Michael Angley Live. And then check out the Daily Update Monday to Friday, various times on UPRN. And also Discovery Paranormal Tuesday nights, 9 p.m., talking about everything paranormal. A lot of interesting subjects or whatever kind of grabs me. I like to put people on there too, like Robbie Thomas, have him on and that type of thing. So listen to those shows and then come back here every Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern for Michael Angley Live. This is United Public Radio Network, UPRN, talkradio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7, and Pastor Christian saying goodnight.